Thank you. All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas Vayishlach. So we're focusing tonight a little bit on what I think is perhaps one of the most riveting stories, not just in Vayishlach, but in truth is in Bereishis. So the pasuk begins. Let's begin with number one. Vayakam balayla hu vayikach es shtei nashav v'estei shivchosav. So remember again, a little bit of context. Yaakov Avinu is getting ready to meet his brother Esav. After 22 years of separation, Yaakov has absolutely no idea what to expect, except to expect the worst. So he prepares himself, as Rashi HaKadosh tells us, for three things. He prepares himself in prayer, he prepares himself for battle, and he prepares himself with bribery. He prepares for the encounter by trying to bribe his brother, by trying to send Esav an incredible and expensive, or a lot of livestock. So the Torah now says this is the night before that fateful encounter. So the night before, Vayokam balaylohu, Vayikach eshtein ashav, Vestei shivchosav, Vesachadar sayiladav, Vayavores ma'avar yabok. So that night before, Yaakov Avinu takes everyone, he takes his family, he takes his livestock, he takes his possessions, and he crosses over ma'avar yabok. In fact, today, if you go ahead and you drive down Route 90 in Eretz Yisrael, up to the north, right, the Jordan Valley Road, so actually, again, there is a spot that's called Ma'avar Yabok. That's the actual spot where Yaakov Avinu went ahead and crossed over the Jordan River to come back into Eretz Yisrael. It's actually quite dramatic. So the Torah tells us what happens. Vayikachim vayavrim es hanachal vayaver es hashelo vayivoser Yaakov levado vayiovik ish imo ad alos hashachar. A very strange episode. Yaakov Avinu is left alone and he engages in a struggle. He gets into a fight with a mysterious ish, a mysterious man. Vayar, I'm number one, Pasuk Chavav, verse 26. Vayar ki lo yacholo vayika bakaf yirecho Vateke kaf yerech Yaakov be'af koimo. So the ish, the man, sees that he cannot go ahead and overcome Yaakov, so he cannot defeat him. So what does he do? Literally, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip became dislocated. Okay, so really what they're going to say is not really the hip. What he ended up doing is he ends up injuring Yaakov in the thigh. He ends up injuring Yaakov in the thigh. So what happens? Vayomer shachini ki ala shachar, vayomer lo ashalecha chakim berachtani. So skip a little bit. So that here, this is the whole, so he tells him, what's your name? Your name is not Yaakov, your name is Yisrael. You know the story. Skip down a little bit to verse 32, pasuk lamed beis. Vayizrach lo ha-shemesh kasher avar es pinuel, v'utzolea al yirecho. The sun comes up, and comes the next morning, Yaakov Avinu is limping. Why is Yaakov Avinu limping? As a result of the injury he sustained during the battle with the mysterious ish. Verse 33, Pasuk Lamed, Gimel number 1. Al Kain, lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael gid hanosha, asher akaf hayarach ad hayom hazeh, kinoga bekaf yerech Yaakov b'gid hanosha. So this story has a very important halacha l'maisa, practical ramification for us, which is the Torah tells us that therefore as a result of this story, now the Torah tells us where was Yaakov's injury? Yaakov's injury apparently was in the sciatic nerve. Sciatic nerve. And as a result of Yaakov being injured in the sciatic nerve, therefore, to this day, we do not eat the gid hanosha. We do not eat the sciatic nerve of the animal. I know everyone's very disappointed that you don't get to eat the sciatic nerve, but again, it's not really a problem that you can't eat it. The different problem is the trebering of it. The difficulty is the removal of the gid, which is one of the reasons why kosher meat is a bit more expensive, because there's more labor involved in the preparation of kosher meat as a result of having the need to remove the gid hanosha. So because Yaakov Avinu was injured in the sciatic nerve, remember again, the sciatic nerve, at least for people, is the largest nerve fiber, right? It begins by the lower back and extends all the way down to the feet. So therefore, again, because Yaakov Avinu was injured in the sciatic nerve, therefore, again, Al Kain lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael gid hanosha. We do not eat the gid hanosha to this very day. Why? Ki noga b'kaf yerech Yaakov b'gid hanosha. For Yaakov Avinu was injured in the sciatic nerve, therefore, we don't eat it as well. So the question is obvious. What does this mean? Yaakov Avinu is injured in the sciatic nerve, so we don't eat the sciatic nerve of the animal? So there's a number of questions. First of all, this is quite fascinating because in general, although this is not a topic for tonight, but in general, we do not learn binding eternal law from any event that occurred before Mount Sinai. The halachos that we have in the Torah that are binding, for example, where do we know the mitzvah of Bris Milah from? Where do we know the mitzvah of Bris Milah from? No. So interestingly enough, Avraham Avinu was the first person to do Bris Milah, but in fact, if you'll notice, the Torah in the beginning of Parshas Tazria restates the mitzvah. Ubayom hashmini yimol basar arlaso. Why does the Torah restate it? Because anything that occurred before Sinaitic revelation, we don't really learn binding law from the stories before Har Sinai. So this is just interesting. So again, leaving that piece aside, which many of the Mefarshim find interesting, what's the symbolism here? So to this very day, there's a part of the animal that we don't eat, the git hanasha, the sciatic nerve, and why don't we eat it? Because Yaakov was injured in the sciatic nerve, therefore we don't eat it. Okay. And if Yaakov Avinu would have broken his big toe in the episode with the malach, also he wouldn't eat the big toe of the animal. Meaning, obviously there's something going on over here. There's some unique symbolism that is being expressed in this halacha. Let's try to understand what it is. So first of all, I'll show you just a couple of different approaches. V'chizkuni says over here, well actually skip down to number 3. V'chizkuni writes something amazing. This is actually dramatically beautiful. Bedinu, sheyesh liknos v'le'enosh b'nei Yisrael. V'chizkuni says that the prohibition to consume the git hanasha is in fact a punitive measure. It's a form of punishment. It's a musr to klal Yisrael. What's the musr? Listen to this. Sheimichu es aviem holich yichidi kidichsiv vayvose Yaakov levado. This chizkuni is amazing. You see, if you notice, there's a what's the statement that opens up the story of Yaakov Avinu's struggle with the ish? Vayvose Yaakov levado. Yaakov was alone. Says the chizkuni, what a condemnation of Yaakov Avinu's family. You have 12 sons. Where are your children? Where are your children? Remember again, what is Yaakov Avinu doing during this time? What is he doing? He's schlepping. Remember again, he's schlepping. Because remember, they took a whole bunch of stuff. They ran away from Lavan. They're coming back to Eretz Yisrael. They have to cross everyone over Ma'avar Yabok. So what Yaakov Avinu is doing is literally schlepping stuff from one side of the river to the next side of the river. And what's happening over here? Yaakov Avinu is unpacking the groceries from the car. And what's every single parent's question when they're unpacking the groceries from the car?
Where are my kids?
Right? Where are my kids? Yaakov Avinu is schlepping stuff across Ma'avar Yabok. And where are the kids? There are 12 able-bodied young men. Where are they? So the Chizkuni writes that this was a condemnation of the children of Yaakov. How could it be that you left your father alone? How could it be, and all kidding aside, how could it be that he's schlepping? How could it be that he's working? Remember, Yaakov Avinu is not a young man. I mean, he's young by biblical standards, but he's in his 80s, right? So again, how could it be that he's handling all of this stuff all by himself? So look what he writes. V'hein hayu giborim, v'hayu lehen lahamtin avien, ulesayo im yitztarech. They should have been there to help their father. And instead, they did not accompany their father. And look what the Chizkuni says. As a result of them not accompanying their father, therefore what? They are alone. Excuse me. He is alone. Yaakov is alone. And as a result of him being alone, v'huzak al yadam. So the Chizkuni says something amazing. This mysterious ish, whoever it is, and we'll discuss who it is, starts up with Yaakov. Why? Why? Because he perceives Yaakov as vulnerable. Why is Yaakov vulnerable? Because he's alone. Therefore, again, says the Chizkuni, Umikan ve'elech yihye lohem lezecher v'yu zrizim b'mitzvas levia ulekach liva Yaakov es Yosef. So this is amazing. Says the Chizkuni, the entire prohibition of not eating the git hanashe, do you know what the message is? You know what the message is? Look out for each other. Look out for each other. Yaakov Avinu got injured because his family was not looking out for him. Because children were not looking out for a parent. Because community members were not looking out for other community members. Therefore, says the Chizkoni, this is so amazing, you would never think this, the entire message of the prohibition of Git Hanasha is don't leave a Jew behind. Don't leave a Jew behind. Look out for people. And look out for those who may be vulnerable when they are left alone. Who's vulnerable when they're left alone? Everyone is vulnerable when they're left alone. So ultimately, again, be conscious and be cognizant of the needs of the other. And I'm sure, what were the sons of Yaakov doing? What were they doing? I'm sure they weren't going ahead and playing golf. I'm sure they weren't going ahead, you know. I'm sure they were involved in something that was important as well. But you know, sometimes in life, just because you have something important to do does not mean that you could ignore the needs of the other. A Jew must be ever cognizant and ever aware of the needs of the other. Even if I'm busy with my own stuff, I must be conscious of what is happening with those around me. That, says the Chizkuni, is the first message of Git Hanasha. We don't eat the Git Hanasha. Be ever aware of the needs of the other. But then I'll show you another incredible idea. Look at the Rashbam in number 4. The Rashbam says, Al kein lo yochlu, why do we not eat the Git Hanasha? So the Rashbam writes, number 4, Lezichron gvuraso shel Yaakov. We actually don't eat it as a way to remember the incredible heroism of Yaakov. What's the heroism? V'neis she'asla kadosh baruch hu shalom meis. Now we'll get into this a little bit later on, but there's a certain miraculous salvation for Yaakov. Yaakov was fighting this mysterious Ish, this mysterious man. Like I said, we'll discuss who the Ish is in just a little bit. But the Rashbam says, Yaakov Avinu should not have been able to win this battle. But yet, he did. He stood his ground. And even though he emerged injured, there was an incredible miracle that he lived. He lived. He managed to survive the fight. As a way of remembering that Yaakov Avinu survived the fight, we don't eat the Git Hanasha. Okay, Jews have survived many fights. What's unique about this one? Take a look at number 5. So the Sefer HaChinuch says something beautiful. He says, Mishrashei Mitzvazu. Remember again, the Sefer HaChinuch goes through all 613 mitzvos and actually does something amazing. Explains the halachic details and mechanisms of the mitzvah, but perhaps most importantly, gives what we call the Shoresh HaMitzvah. Gives the reason for mitzvos. It happens to be, if you're looking for something to pick up in your spare time to learn, Sefer HaChinuch, 630 mitzvos, gives you the reasons. Even though, again, some mitzvos might not have necessarily a rational reason, the Sefer HaChinuch finds the deeper meaning behind everything. So look what he writes. What's the deeper meaning behind the prohibition, Titi Git Hanasha? So listen to what he says. He says that there's a much greater metaphor at play over here. Kedei Shetia Remez Li Yisrael, Sha'af Api Sheyispalu Tzaros Rabos Begolios Miada Amim, Umiyad bnei Esav, shiyu betuchim shelo yovedu, ela liolam ya'amod zar'am ushmam, v'yavo lahem goel v'yigale miyad sar. So listen to this. Sefer HaChinuch says, if there's one thing that we know about being a Jew, is that it is never going to be easy. And when I say, I don't mean that in terms of the obligations or ritual obligations that are upon us, but in terms of the fact that being a Jew comes with an incredible amount of adversity, difficulty, and tragic suffering. So as a Jew, I know that I'm going to suffer, but I also know that no matter how intense the suffering may be, I will still be standing at the end of it. Nothing could break me. Nothing could go ahead and obliterate me. I may suffer, I may be compromised, I may even be injured, but I will still remain standing. Look what the Sefer HaChinuch says. U'bizichram, I'm in number 5, the third line. Ubizichran tamid inyan zeh, ayde mitzah shteli zikaron. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, this entire message is captured in the mitzvah or in the prohibition of Git Hanasha. So the prohibition that I'm not allowed to eat the sciatic nerve of the animal has an incredible metaphoric message. What's the message? Look what he writes. He says, V'remez zehu, l'fi she'oso malach shenilcham im Yaakov avinu, so we're going to discuss this in greater depth in just a little bit, but we're going to see the Midrashic interpretation that the Ish, the man that Yaakov Avinu fought with, was not a man. But rather, who was it? It was the ministering angel of Esav. Every nation has its own ministering angel. Every nation except who? Jewish people. We don't have a ministering angel. We have God. God is our ministering angel. But every other nation has its own ministering angel. And the Medrash, again, we'll see this in greater depth in just a little bit. The Ish, the man who fought with Yaakov, was none other than the ministering angel of Esav. The ministering angel of Esav. So what happens? Listen to this. Sheba, so Ratza la'akro Yaakov mina olam. What was the ministering, why was the ministering angel of Esav fighting with Yaakov? What was the purpose of this fight? What was the purpose of this fight? To remove him from the world. Remember again, the Gemara says something amazing. Klal hi, Esav sone es Yaakov. It's a general principle. Esav despises, Esav hates Yaakov. Why does Esav hate Yaakov? Why? At the end of the day, like most forms of hatred, it's irrational. That's what the Gemara says. By the way, we understand this very well because we've seen the ugliness of irrational anti-Semitism. We see it. Unfortunately, again, we see it unfolding around us. Anti-Semitism, which is the hatred of Esav, is irrational. Most forms of blanket hatred are irrational. There's no really good reason why ultimately, again, you would hate another human being to the point that you'd want to maim them, hurt them, or kill them. So ultimately, again, the Gemara says, or the Sefer HaChinuch explains, that what's unfolding over here is the eternal battle between Yaakov and Esav. Bless you. The struggle that really started in utero. Remember again, Yaakov and Esav, they're babies in utero. They're babies inside of Rivka. There's a struggle. There's an animosity. There's a hatred. So the night before the fateful encounter between Yaakov and Esav, who shows up? The Malach of Esav. And what does he want to do? He wants to obliterate Yaakov. Why? The why doesn't matter. There's just hatred. There's just animosity. And he just wants to destroy Yaakov. So what happens? But something amazing happens. He struggles with Yaakov the whole night. And yet what? Velo Yachalo. He could not overtake Yaakov. Now what is he able to do to Yaakov? He's able to injure him. He's able to injure him in the thigh, which, as we're going to discuss, has the ability to be a debilitating injury. The cane, so says the Sefer HaChinuch, something amazing. This struggle is a metaphor for Yaakov and all his future descendants, all of us. What's the metaphor? The metaphor is that the descendants of Yaakov will be locked in an eternal struggle with the descendants of Esav. And remember again, when does this struggle happen? When does it happen? At night. Remember again, night represents so many different things. But night represents uncertainty. Night sometimes seems, you know, like sometimes when you can't fall asleep at night. So it's amazing. When you're exhausted and your head is low and you fall asleep, night is never long enough. But yet when you can't sleep, when you can't sleep, the night feels like it's never going to end. So the Esav attacks Yaakov at night. And that, I guarantee you, was one long night. A struggle-filled night. A battle-filled night. And it feels like it's never going to end. And Yaakov gets injured. And Yaakov gets injured in a dramatic way. But what happens? Ulebasof tielana Yeshua mehem. Kemo shematzinu ba'av. But what happens? What's the end of the story? Yaakov remains standing. The sun comes up, and Yaakov is standing. Now, amazingly enough, by the way, a little bit later on, the parasha also tells us that Yaakov is healed from his injury. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, this little story that we all learn when we're kids, this little story is no ordinary story. This is the story of our people. This is the story of Am Yisrael being locked in a battle with Esav during a night which never seems to end. But sometimes you don't look at the story, look at how the story, how does the story end? The sun comes up. And what happens when the sun comes up? We're limping. because Esav has the ability to hurt us very badly. We may be limping, but we're still standing. And says the Sefer HaChinuch, in the story of Yaakov and Esav, in the story of Yaakov's battle with the Ish, is the story of the Jewish people. The battle is an ongoing battle during the unending night. And Esav injures us sometimes in crippling fashions. But the strength of Klal Yisrael is that when the sun comes up, we're still standing. Now, by the way, you begin to understand that this is not just a metaphor for the national condition, but it's a metaphor for the individual condition as well. Because the truth is, we all face the night of struggles, right? Whether it's personal struggles, familial struggles. You know, I was just reading, there was a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal the other day. It was, the title of the article was, Getting Through Thanksgiving with Your Family, right? And it was amazing. There were like strategies for how to go ahead and make it through Thanksgiving with your, and it was so interesting. One of the strategies was get an ally. In other words, make sure you identify someone else in your family who like holds like you, right? And sit next to that person. The other thing was play. It was just so interesting to see. So it's amazing. Isn't it amazing how like everyone has their struggles? So some people have their struggles with their family. Some people have their struggles with their career. Some people have their struggles with themselves. Some people have their struggles with God. Everyone has their struggles. And some of our struggles are not Thanksgiving. Some of our struggles are significantly acute. And it feels like the struggles are never ending. They're just not stopping. My life is one big nighttime. But yeah, and what happens? And I'm injured. The struggles, you know, it's, you know, we always try to be positive. And we always try to be optimistic. And we always try to be hopeful. But you ever have one of those days where you say to yourself, I am tired of being upbeat. I'm tired of being upbeat. Right? Today, I'm going to be morose. Today, I'm going to be depressing. Today, I'm going to stop pretending like everything is going to be okay, because the truth is it hasn't been okay for a very long time. And to be honest, I don't see that it's going to be okay in the foreseeable future. I feel like I'm stuck in the middle of nighttime. So what do you do when that happens? You open up your Chumash Bereishis to Parshas Vayishlach, and you study this story. And what do you begin to see? You begin to see that no matter how intense the struggles of life are, programmed in our DNA is the ability to withstand injury and the ability to wait until sunrise and the ability to remain standing. The challenges of life hurt us, and it's very important to acknowledge this, because sometimes, you know, this happens, you know where you see this happen very often? You see this happen in the realm of interpersonal conflict. It could happen in a marriage, it could happen in a friendship, it could happen in any relationship between two people, where one person hurts another person. So maybe this scene has played out for you, right? Somebody you love and care about hurts you. And then what happens? They realize they did something wrong, and so what do? Good, they apologize, right? They apologize. So very often, after people issue apologies, the expectation is that what? We're good, right? Everything is fine. Everything is fine. Like back to what it was, right? It's like the event never happened because my apology was really sincere. But the truth is, that's not how trauma in life works. When you've undergone a traumatic event, and remember, I'm using that word traumatic in a very loose way. When you undergo a traumatic event, it injures you. It injures you. And even though the sun is up and everything is great, the injury is very often still there. It's still present. But the most important thing in life sometimes is that you're still standing. Sometimes the greatest accomplishment at the end of a night filled with struggle is that I still have the koach to stand on my own two feet. Says the Sefer HaChinuch. That is the profundity. So do you want to know, next time somebody asks you, so, why don't you eat the Gid HaNosha? So it's to remind us of this incredible idea. Number one, the national message. No matter how much we suffer as a people at the hands of Esav, no matter how many injuries we endure at the hands of Esav, two things we believe in. Number one, the sun will come up tomorrow. We coined that phrase. That's ours, right? The sun will come up tomorrow. That's number one. And number two, that although I may be limping, I'm still standing on my two feet. And whatever applies ultimately again for the nation applies for the individual as well. At time I may suffer trauma, at time I may suffer difficulties, at time my life feels like one big nightfall, and the Esavs of my life are constantly pummeling me. I have to believe the sun is going to come up. I have to be optimistic that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. And I have to believe in myself that despite the injuries that my life circumstances may visit upon me, I will remain standing. All of this, says the Sefer HaChinuch, is embodied in the, it's not even a positive mitzvah, it's a prohibition ultimately to consume the Gid HaNosha. But I want to share with you one last approach, which we'll spend the rest of the evening on. So perhaps in order to go ahead and really gain an appreciation as to what this mitzvah is. And the truth is, you know, this is interesting, one of these mitzvahs that most of us really have no connection to, right? Because by the time you're getting your piece of meat at the supermarket, right, the Gid HaNosha has already been removed. But conceptually, you know, we could still connect to the mitzvah. So I want to go back for just a moment, because the truth is, the most intriguing part of this story is really, as the Sefer HaChinuch alluded to, this Ish. Who is this mystery man? Who is this? So I want to share with you two ideas. Number one, if you look at number six, so the Medrash kind of, and the Sefer HaChinuch already alluded to this, the Medrash writes, who is the Ish? Saro Shel Esav Hayah. It was ultimately who? It was the ministering angel of Esav. Rabbi Sachs advances a very dramatic and novel idea, which, to be honest, I did not find in any of the classical commentaries, but he's Rabbi Sachs, and you'll see it makes a lot of sense, so we'll take a look at it. Look at number seven. He says, Jacob himself had no doubt. It was God. Rabbi Sachs posits that the Ish, the man, who Yaakov Avinu struggled with the entire night, was not the ministering angel of God, but in fact was who? Was none other than God himself. Now, it's interesting. Where does he get this from? So he says, he called the place of the encounter Peniel. Yaakov Avinu names the spot where he had the struggle the entire night. That struggle that spanned the entire, he called it Peniel. Why did he call it Peniel? Because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. The real Lashon, the Pasuk is, Ki ra'isi Elokim panim al panim, I have seen Elokim face to face, and I was saved. Now, all the other Mefarshim understand that Elohim in this pasuk is not a reference to God. Elohim is a reference to angels. But Rabbi Sachs wants to understand it in a literal sense. I have seen God. I've seen the face of God. I've struggled with God, and I survived. He says, for you have struggled with God, and many of hitherto we have seen Jacob struggle with human beings, with Esav and Laban. Now the text seems to suggest he has struggled with God himself, which raises now a very basic question, which is, why is God struggling with Yaakov? Meaning, in the narrative that the Ish was the ministering angel of Esav, so I understand what's unfolding over here. It's the ongoing eternal struggle between Yaakov and Esav. But if you understand that the Ish ultimately is who? Is God himself. Why would God be fighting with Yaakov? Remember again, Yaakov is presumably doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to do. So why would God be struggling with Yaakov? So I want to share with you something amazing. Take a look at number 8. The Rashbam again. The Rashbam was the grandson of Rashi. So the Rashbam says as follows. Yosef va'yivaser Yaakov levado kilomar. Now remember again, how does the whole story sound? Like we saw before, Yaakov Avinu was left alone. What was happening? Kilomar, Shehevir kol asher lo, shelo haya od la'avor elohu levado, v'rotza la'avor achareihem, kilivroach derech acheres, shelo yifgeshenu Esav niskavin. Get ready for this. If you're happy with your conception of the story, you might want to leave now. Right? Because I'm going to turn it on its head. So says the Rashbam something amazing. Yaakov Avinu, what is he doing? Get ready for this. Yaakov Avinu had already transported everything across the Jordan River onto the Eretz Yisrael side. The Rashbam posits that in the middle of the night, Yaakov Avinu has a change of heart, a change of mind, change of plans. He's not going to encounter Esav. Instead, what does he plan on doing? He wants to run away. So what is he doing? He starts transporting everything back to the other side of the Jordan River in an effort to avoid seeing Esav. Literally again, kilivroach derech acheres. So remember again, up until this entire point of the story, he's preparing for the encounter. And as we said before, he's preparing himself in three ways. With gifts, with prayer. He's preparing for confrontation, for war as well. And then something happens in the middle of the night. Yaakovina says, you know what? No, I'm not doing this. I'm running. I'm getting out of here. I'm not going to confront Esav tomorrow. We're just going to go in a different direction. So what happens, says the Rashbam? It's at that moment that the Ish starts up with Yaakov. Why does the Ish start up with Yaakov? Vayavek, number 8, last line. Malach imo shelo yuchal livroach. Why does the Ish start up with Yaakov? So that Yaakov could not run away. See, if you notice again, the Ish fights with Yaakov until when? Until when? Daybreak. At daybreak, what happens? The messengers come back. Esav achicha bal krasecha. Esav's here. So the angel, the Ish, I should say, says the Rashbam, fights with Yaakov until daybreak, until it is too late to run away. So understand what's happening over here. Yaakov Avinu, in the middle of the night, decides change of plans, everyone. We're not going to see Esav tomorrow. We're getting out of Dodge. We're running away. We're going to avoid Esav. Let's go pack it up. We're getting out of here. Right as he's ready to mobilize the family to avoid Esav, so the Ish starts up with him and fights with him until daybreak. Until daybreak. Why couldn't they keep fighting? They didn't have to keep fighting. Because the entire point of the struggle was to keep Yaakov rooted in place to prevent him from running away. Which then leads to the obvious question, which is, why? Look at number 9. So, Rav Soloveitchik points out something amazing. He says, the Rav explained that in the end, Yaakov never divides the camp. Now, this is another piece, by the way, that is amazing. Remember, again, in the beginning, when Yaakov was making the preparations to meet Esav, one of the things that he does is he says he's going to split the camp. Why does he split the camp? Why does he split the camp? Because his logic is, if Esav attacks one camp, at least there'll be someone who survives. But amazingly enough, he never splits the camp. Why not? Because the Malach delayed him, so he didn't have time. This is why Vayisa'in Avine Esav, he lifted his eyes and Esav was upon him. The reason Hashem sent the Malach was because it wasn't proper what Yaakov planned to do. Okay, so what's amazing over here is as follows. What's unfolding? Why is the Ish? Now again, whether the Ish is God, or whether the Ish is the Saroshal Esav to a certain degree, becomes irrelevant. What's the point of this struggle? Why is Yaakov Avinu kept enmeshed in this struggle the whole night? Why? To prevent him from fleeing. To prevent him from fleeing. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol fights with Yaakov the entire night, so that by the time the fight is over, it's too late to run, it's too late to split the camp, and at the end of the day, Yaakov has no choice but to what? But to confront Esav. So there's something incredibly deep unfolding over here. If we go back and we look at the last couple of episodes with Yaakov, we see something very interesting. When Yaakov Avinu leaves the home of a loved one, how does he leave? Look at number 10. Vayignov Yaakov eslev Lavan ha'arami, ad belihi gidlo ki boreachum. So the pasuk says, literally, Yaakov stole the heart of Lavan because he did not tell him that he was fleeing. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Yaakov Avinu, how does he leave the house of Lavan? How does he leave? He snuck away. By the way, what's the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's opinion of Yaakov's form of departure? How does the Torah feel about Yaakov's actions? Doesn't sound so good, right? Why? Because he got vayignov Yaakov eslev Lavan. The Torah says that Yaakov was stealing Lavan's heart. So clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not very happy with the way that Yaakov Avinu is leaving. What else do we see about Yaakov Avinu? Take a look at number 11. Vayigdalu hanarim vayesav isher deatzayid. Esav was a hunter. Ish sadeh. A man of the field, the Yaakov ishtam Yosheva Olam. Yaakov is simple, dwells in tents. What does it mean? He's simple. Rashi says, "Eino baki b'chalila." He was not as astute in all of these things. Elalibo kein piv misheino charif l'ramos karo itam. So you know what the contrast between the brothers are? Yaakov is a man of the field. He's a hunter. In other words, Esav is a man of the field. He's a hunter. Esav is a man of conflict. A man of conflict. What type of person is Yaakov? What type of person is Yaakov? We would call him today conflict averse. Yaakov believed in avoiding conflict. His issue, I'm conflict averse. I have absolutely no interest in conflict. So when he goes ahead, and by the way, when you begin to understand that Yaakov in his personality, a lot of things become clear, right? Ultimately, again, when he leaves, remember again, let's go back for just a moment. So he's an Ishtam. This is the contrast between the brothers. Esav is an Ishtsayid. He's a hunter. In order to be a hunter, you have to be ready for what? Conflict, right? I'll give you a hint. The next five questions I'm going to ask you, the answer is conflict, right? In order to be a hunter, right, you have to be a man of?
Conflict.
Excellent, good, right? In order to be an Ish Sadeh, you have to be a man of?
Conflict.
Excellent, good. Yaakov Avinu is just the opposite. He's conflict averse. Conflict averse, right? He's an Ish Tam. He's a man of peace. I'm not interested in conflict. I just want shalom. So by the way, when you begin to understand this, so remember the incredibly difficult exchange that happens between Yaakov and Rachel in last week's parasha? Right? Rachel Imenu approaches Yaakov, and what does she say? Havali banim, give me children. Give me children. Rachel Imenu is a barren woman who just wants children. And how does Yaakov respond to her, essentially? What do you want from me? Hatachas al kimani? What do you mean, what does she want from you? She wants empathy. She wants compassion. But Yaakov Avinu, he's not a man of conflict. So now I feel, Rachel, you're engaging me in conflict. You know the other very strange episode where, again, Rachel wants the dudaim. Remember the flowers from Leah? You remember that story, right? Whatever the reason she wanted those flowers. And so Yaakov Avinu comes home from the field. He's making his way to Leah's tent, and Rachel, I'm sorry, he's making his way to Rachel's, I'm sorry, I just said the opposite. Rachel wanted the flowers of Leah, and Leah says, fine, I'll give you the flowers, but I'd like Yaakov to be with me tonight. And Rachel says, fine. Yaakov comes back from the field, he's going to Rachel's tent, Leah comes out and says, sorry, you're with me tonight. And what does Yaakov say?
Okay.
Right? Oh, me. Isn't there like a party that says, what? Like, I'm not chattel. You know, like this is not the way, like, we should do things here. Okay, we have family issues. Every family has its dynamics. But like, I'm not a thing that just simply, again, you decide where I go between who gets the fun. But yeah, nothing. Why? Because this was his midah. It was conflict averse. Yaakov Avinu was an Ish HaShalom. He was a man of peace. He did not want conflict. That's why, again, remember, going back, you could once you understand this, all the episodes become much clearer. That's when Rivka tells him, dress up like your brother. Dress up like your brother and get the brachas. So again, Yaakov says, no, he doesn't want to say no to his mother, but he doesn't want any part of this. He just is uninterested in this. Yaakov Avinu is the Ish HaShalom. He is conflict averse. So what's happening the night before the encounter? Yaakov Avinu realizes that there's an incredible probability of what? Of what? Of conflict. So Yaakov Avinu says, okay, I'm preparing the whole time for conflict. I'm preparing, right? 3 days for conflict. And now last minute, what does he decide? I'm conflict averse. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. There's no need for this. There's no need for us to get into a fight. I don't know if Esav is in a good mood, in a foul mood. He's going to be happy to see me, want to kill me. And see, you know what? Let's just get out of here. Let's just get out of here. And what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. You cannot run. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching Yaakov an incredible lesson. Take a look at number 13. There's an amazing Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Ben Zoma Omer. This is a very profound Mishnah on many levels. Ezehu Gibor, who is one who is strong? Hakovesh es Yitzro. Now, how do we normally translate this? Hakovesh es Yitzro? Conquer your desires. So again, like the Rabbeinu Yonah discusses, it says, as well. This idea, the Yetzer, we assume means the Yetzer Hara, means our carnal wants, our desires, our proclivities, our passions. That true strength is manifest in self-mastery, is the ability to go ahead and control my most basic, sometimes even animalistic desires and wants, to channel them, to frame them, and to be able to control them in some way. I don't have to obliterate them, but I have to control it. Ezu Gibor, that's true strength. True strength is not manifest in your ability to lord or to rule over someone else. True strength is manifest in your ability to exercise self-mastery. But look at number 15. The Tosas Yom Tov, one of the commentaries on the Mishnah, says something absolutely amazing. He says, Akovish es Yisro, Yitzahara Nikras, actually, I'm sorry, skip to number 16. Va'od perish, shuhu Yitzro, ha-miyuchad lo, v'nis'at sein bo. Get ready for this. Says the Tosas Yom Tov, Yitzer doesn't just mean your Yetzirah, negative things. Yetzer means your innate predispositions and proclivities. Each of us are born with innate predispositions. Right? This, you know, the Gemara discusses this idea. The Gemara says that if a person is born under the constellation sign of Mars, so the Gemara says that they're going to be a shofech damin. They're going to spill blood. So the Gemara says, that means you're going to be a spiller of blood. It doesn't mean you're going to be a murderer. You could be a murderer. You could also be a surgeon. You could be a moel. You could be a butcher. The idea the Gemara is trying to teach us is this concept that we are born with certain predispositions. This, by the way, is also one of the most important lessons in parenting. Right? Because this is what Shlomo HaMelech says when he said, Chanoch lenar al pi darko, educate your child according to his way. What does he mean according to his way? Every child has a unique predisposition. Now again, some things can be changed. Actually, the Vilna Gaon says something amazing. The Vilna Gaon says there are certain things about people that you cannot change. It's their innate predisposition. It's part of their DNA. It's part of their makeup. It's part of their personalistic framework. So says the Tosafot Yom Tov something amazing. Each of us is born with certain aspects. So if you remember again, Esav, for example, the Torah describes him as an Edomi, right? Ruddy complexion. Who else is born with ruddy complexion? David HaMelech. And in fact, again, when Shmuel first sees that David has ruddy complexion, Shmuel does not want to anoint him as king. Shmuel feels that this guy is reckless. David HaMelech wasn't reckless. David HaMelech was passionate. And the difference between David and an Esav, both were passionate. The question just in life is how you choose to channel your passion. So says it to us something amazing. Ezuhu Gibor HaKovesh Es Yitzro. Sometimes in life, well, let me say it differently. In life, you have to recognize your innate predispositions. You have to recognize your personality quirks. You have to recognize the parts of your persona that are really part of you. And there are times in life when you have to use it and amplify it. And there are times in life when you have to rein it in. Because sometimes in life, Ezu Gibor, who is strong? HaKovesh Es Yitzro. See, sometimes in life you could say, this is who I am. And sometimes in life you have to say, this is who I am, and I need to change it. And I need to modify it. And I need to adapt it. Because this personality trait does not work for these circumstances. So perhaps what's unfolding over here is something dramatically amazing. Yaakov Avinu is conflict diverse. Is an Ish HaShalom. Is being a person of shalom, conflict averse, a good midah? Is it a good attribute? At times. Like most other things in life, it's good in right moderation. You know, 9 out of 10 times, it's good to be a man of peace or a woman of peace. But there is that time where you have to stand your ground and you have to butt heads. And there are times where sometimes you have to draw your line in the sand and say, I'm sorry, I cannot yield. I will not yield. I cannot accommodate that. 9 out of 10 times I'll yield. 9 out of 10 times I'll accommodate. But I can't always be conflict diverse. I can't always be an Isha Shalom. Sometimes I have to stand my ground. Is it good to run away from conflict? Is it good to run away from, this is a very important idea. Is it good to run away from conflict?
No.
It depends. Right? It's always a safe answer in Judaism. It depends. There are times when, yes, it is very good to run away from conflict. You know, there are some people who have to fight every battle. Every battle, everything is a battle. So people like that are usually just angry people. Most battles in life are not worth waging. More times in life, it is better to be conflict averse. It is better to run away from machlokes. But there are times in life where you have to engage. There are, see, some people are conflict averse. They're not really conflict averse. What are they? They're just scared. They're just scared. Meaning, they're conflict averse because they don't want to confront the issues with their family. They don't want to confront the issues in their marriage. They don't want to confront the issues in themselves. See, you know, shalom is a great thing. You know why? Shalom provides people with a lot of cover in life. Because you could avoid tackling a lot of life issues under the guise of shalom. I'm a person of peace. I don't like to rock the boat. So I'm not interested in machlokas. What you're really saying is, I'm too scared to confront the issues I have with my spouse, with my kids, with my parents, with myself, with my God. So like most things in life, it's an incredible balance. Shalom is good, except during those times when you have to take a stand. Running away from conflict is usually a beautiful thing, except there are times when you have to engage. Because there are times in life where there are things that are broken in my existence, and if I don't confront them, I can never fix them. I can run away from my problems for a very, you know, it's amazing. You can run away from your, contrary to popular opinion, you can run away from your problems for a very, very, very long time. There are people who run away from their problems until they're on their deathbed. And they're very successful for their entire life until they're gasping their last breaths and they realize that they did not live the life that they should have led because they never chose to engage. Because they were always running. Because they were always hiding under the cover of being conflict averse, of being an Ish HaShalom, and were afraid to engage and really meet the challenges head on. And so what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Yaakov is something absolutely amazing. Yaakov, I love you. And you are an Ish Tam Yoshev Oalim. You are a man of peace. You are a man who is conflict averse. But Yaakov, it's time to stop running. And it's time to start engaging. You have a ruptured relationship with your brother on many different levels. And that, remember, we spoke about this last year, that ruptured relationship had an incredible ripple effect. Yaakov Avinu misses the Levaya of his own mother. Yaakov Avinu I wanted to point something out, very interesting. If you notice, by the way, Yaakov Avinu gets to Eretz Canaan, but it takes him a while until he goes back home. You ever wonder about that? Very strange. You've been away from home for over 20 years. You've been away from home over 20 years. It's like, imagine for just a moment, yeah, your parent, you're right, your family lives in New Jersey. You haven't seen them in 20 years. And then you're on the way, and you decide, you know what? I love the Molly Pitcher rest stop on the turnpike. It's so fantastic. You know what? Let's stay here for a couple of days, and then we'll go ahead, and we'll see that you're in Eretz Canaan. You're a couple of days' journey from your father's home, yet it takes you weeks until you get home. Why? Because the family is ruptured. Because things are not good. Because he fled from home under the threat of death from his older brother. Esav didn't go to Rivka's Levaya. Yaakov wasn't by Rivka's Levaya. Mom was buried in total anonymity. Total anonymity. Yaakov is blind and handicapped and in the house. The family is broken on so many different levels. And so Yaakov Avinu is gearing up to what? Run away again. And the Kaddish Baruch says, you can't do it, my beloved Yaakov. You've been conflict averse. You've been an Ish HaShalom, and I appreciate that. But if you're ever going to fix this, now you have to engage. At some point in time, you have to confront your challenges. At some point in time, you have to engage the struggle. At some point in time, you're going to have to put yourself in uncomfortable situations with other people if you want any hope of resolution. There are times to avoid conflict, and there are times that you have to stand your ground. And what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching Yaakov is something amazing. That sometimes the very qualities that we think are good qualities are sometimes the very ones that hold us back. Yaakov Avinu being a man of peace, which was an incredible quality. Yaakov Avinu being conflict averse, which is an incredible quality, are the qualities which threaten to hold him back in this moment. Because Yaakov, here is your opportunity for engagement. You need to engage your brother. You don't know what's going to happen. You're right. And it's pretty scary. But you need to stand your ground and you need to engage. Yaakov, you have to stop running from your life problems and from difficulties. It is time to engage them head on. But apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still knew that Yaakov was a flight risk. So what does he do? What does he do? He fights with him the entire night until the sun comes up. Esav is there and Yaakov can no longer flee. And perhaps this is the meaning of the mitzvah of Gid Hanosha. If you think about this for just a moment, Yaakov Avinu was injured in the thigh by the sciatic nerve, which meant come the morning he was limping. If you're limping, what can't you do? You can't run away. HaKadosh Baruch Hu handicapped him, so he could not run away. And perhaps what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving us was this same message. We can't partake of the Gid Hanasha. And what's the message? The message is, you can't run from your problems. You have to find the courage to engage. You have to find the courage to confront. If there's something that's broken, many times we avoid dealing with it under the guise of shalom or under the guise of being conflict averse. And sometimes that works and sometimes that's good. And not all conflicts and not all issues could be resolved immediately. Sometimes things need a little bit of time to sit. But at some point in time, if you're going to get real traction in life, you have to stop beating the Gid Hanosha. You have to take out the sciatic nerve. You have to stop running away and find the koach to confront. And amazingly enough, what does Yaakov Avinu say in the aftermath of that struggle? What does Yaakov Avinu say the next morning? The next morning, he's still standing and he's limping. What does he say to God? What does he say to the son of Shal? He's looking at number 17. Vayikrav Yaakov Shem Hamakom Piniel. Yaakov calls the name of the place Piniel. Why? Ki ra'isi Elokim panim upa el panim vatinatzel nafshi. So what does Yaakov mean to say? Ribono shel olam, I saw you face to face. I struggled with you the entire night. And Yaakov essentially says, Ribono shel olam, thank you for the struggle. Do you know why thank you for the struggle? Vatinatzel nafshi. You saved my life. How did you save my life? Because had you not kept me fighting and on my feet the whole night, had you not injured me in the thigh, I would have spent the rest of my life running. But because you kept me in place, because you handicapped me for at least a little while, because you injured me, you forced me to confront my greatest fears. You forced me to confront my greatest life challenges. You forced me to confront Esav. And here's the amazing part. You know, so many times in life, we avoid confronting certain issues or certain people. And why do we do that? Because, you know, we've all had situations like this. You know, you imagine how that confrontation is going to go, right? And in your mind, it is terrible. It's horrible. Everybody, in your mind, you play it out. And by the end of the confrontation, everybody's yelling or crying, depending, men, women, right? You know, they're yelling, crying, upset, this, that, not talking to each other. And what happens? Sometimes when you summon up the courage to actually confront, something amazing happens, which is, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was going to be. Sometimes the narrative that we build up around the confrontations and challenges that we fear is so fear-evoking that it places the wall even higher. Whereas if we just had the courage to confront, we'd realize that, you know what? It's not so bad. Yaakov Avinu confronts Esav, and what happens? What does he find? What does he find? Leaving aside the Midrashic interpretations, just looking at the Psukim, what does he find? Who or who does he find? A loving brother. A loving older brother who has gone on to find a life of success of his own, who wants Yaakov to travel with him, who wants Yaakov to come live by him, who wants to travel with Yaakov. Amazing thing. Had Yaakov followed his own instinct and run away, he would have never experienced this incredible and beautiful reunification with his brother. And this is the message of Gid Hanasha. Don't run. from your challenges. There are times in life where it's good to be a person of peace, a person of shalom. There are times in life, more often than not, when it is good to be conflict averse. But sometimes a person has to find the koach to stand in place. A person has to find the koach to engage. A person has to find the koach to confront. Because many challenges we have in life will only get worse, only get bigger, and only get scarier if we don't confront them. Rarely is there a problem where if you run from it or ignore it, it'll go away. Generally just the opposite. If you run from it and ignore it, first of all, it follows you. And as we just said, it generally gets bigger, it gets scarier. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, take out the Gid HaNosha. Stop running. Stop fleeing. Sometimes you have to be conflict. What's the opposite of conflict? Averse. Conflict desirous. Right? You have to be in conflict ready. Right? And if you find the koach to be conflict ready, if you find the koach to engage, then we will find that we have an incredible ability to meet all of our life challenges. All right, we'll stop over here.